If your passion lies in elite British road racing and you want an inside line on the teams, riders, organisers and sponsors that make this sport such a compelling spectacle, you're in the right place. I'm Timothy John, and joining me for every episode is my co-host, the Managing Director of Brother UK, Bill Jones.
Thanks, Tim. It's great to be here. We're going to use this platform to talk about all the key issues surrounding the sport. With special guests, deep dives into hot topics and plenty of chat, we'll keep you informed about all things UK racing. Stay tuned.
Coming up in this detailed investigation of the 2021 Tour of Britain, Managing Director Phil Jones lifts the lid on the detailed planning required to place neutral service, powered by Brother UK, at the side of Britain's most prestigious bike race.
There's a lot of work we've had to do behind the scenes just to make sure that of the 18 teams that we have racing in the Tour of Britain, that we can cover all the bases if it comes to service in a hurry.
Andy Hawes, Route Director of the Tour of Britain, explains why every stage of this year's epic parcours offers something new and challenging.
They're all amazing stages. They all have something about them that's unique to that stage. You look at stage one, the first 30 kilometres up through St Just, dropping down into St Ives, Carvis Bay, just stunning.
Harry Tanfield of Team Quebecca NextHash offers advice for young British debutants preparing to test their legs against the world's best.
They've got to go full gas every day. I think that it'll wear people down quite a lot, especially with the route. It's not like you're doing 1,500 metres or 2,000 metres and you have a sprint day thrown in here and there. Every day is hard.
And Larry Hickmott, the founder and editor of BellowUK.net, explains why in a field that contains the reigning world champion, the biggest star of all might just turn out to be a 22-year-old from South London.
I'm hoping that Ethan Hayter, who's such an exciting rider, comes to the race as well. I've lost count of how many races he's won this year, including GCs.
Hello and welcome to this in-depth preview of the 2021 Tour of Britain. After a year's COVID-enforced hiatus, organisers the Sweet Spot Group have returned with an epic edition, running almost the entire length of the British Isles and including stages in England, Scotland and Wales. Its world-class field is headlined by the reigning world champion, Julian Alaphilippe, who won the race in 2018 and this year is back for more. Brother UK has sponsored Britain's national tour since 2014 and served as official print and results partner since 2016. This year, as well as backing the race and serving its teams, riders and organisers with print solutions, our neutral service powered by Brother UK in-race support crews and vehicles will provide a critical service on the road. In this episode, we'll hear from Phil Jones, Brother UK's Managing Director and this podcast's co-host, on the huge organisational effort required to step up from top-tier domestic races to supporting the best teams and riders in the world. Andy Hawes, the Tour of Britain's route director, will lift the lid on the geographical, logistical and sporting knowledge required to plan a route a shade under 1,310 kilometres, running from one end of Britain to the other and loaded with 19,000 metres of climbing. Harry Tanfield, a UCI World Tour professional with Team Quebecca NextHash and a graduate from a Brother UK-sponsored domestic team, explains the differences between riding the Tour of Britain as a continental squad eager for opportunity, and a World Tour team targeting a result. And Larry Hickmott, the founder and editor of Brother UK-sponsored VeloUK.net, shares expert insights gained from covering every edition of the modern Tour of Britain, and even from attending the 1980 edition of its forerunner, the Milk Race. When the 2021 Tour of Britain rolls out of Penzance on Sunday, September the 5th, the presence in the race convoy of three neutral service powered by Brother UK support vehicles, boldly wrapped in our distinctive black and white livery, will be no small achievement. Called up at comparatively short notice by organisers of the Sweet Spot Group, Phil has worked tirelessly with Tony Barry, our vastly experienced neutral service manager, to meet the huge technical and organisational demands of supporting 18 professional cycling teams.
It was only a month or so ago that we got the initial call from Sweet Spot to say, look, if needs be, could you assist us by stepping in? You know, I'm not aware of all the technical details, but fundamentally, you know, that was simply the question that was asked of us. And the answer was, okay, give me 24 hours. 24 hours later, after a chat with Tony and also trying to understand what this might mean for us, because of course there's a financial cost to that, and there's the equipment, there's a huge amount of organisation to be done, planning, getting things ordered, deployed, all that sort of stuff. So we gave a very positive yes the following day to say, look, if you need us, we can rapidly pull this together. So our full machine went into action at that point of right, what are all the practical things like getting the car wrapped, understanding what the technical requirements are going to be, drivers, mechanics. Thankfully, the race organisation obviously is exceptional at doing things like the hotels and all that kind of good stuff, but it's everything really. You've got to think of all of the requirements in advance now in order we could get all the things that we need at a time that even if we were short on anything, when components particularly are in very short supply, as everybody knows. If you're off trying to buy bits and bobs for your bike right now, you'll know that it's not easy.
It's difficult to overstate the operational challenge embraced by Phil, Tony and the Neutral Service Powered by Brother UK in-race support crews in accepting the challenge of supporting a race as epic as this year's Tour of Britain. Supporting 18 teams, many with different technical partners, has offered a very real test of the company motto, at your side. While the technical permutations of a sport with different standards for drivetrains, braking, and even wheel axles can seem endless, Phil reveals that detailed planning offered a solution.
Whilst it seems limitless, they can actually be codified, and we've spent a lot of time in the background over the last couple of weeks building a super spreadsheet which allows us to look at all 18 teams, what bike brand they're riding, what group set they're riding, rotor sizes that they're riding, gears that they're riding, you know, i.e. the 11-speed, 12-speed, what pedals that they're using, etc. In order that we can properly understand what we believe is the technical environment required. And so, for example, right now of the 18 teams attending, we have the answers for 17 of the 18 teams as to what group sets they're riding. 14 of those are on Shimano, 3 are SRAM, and 1 we haven't got the answer yet. That's basically for a Conti team coming from New Zealand. So we're just making those inquiries now. But of course, then what you've got is a difference, SRAM 12-speed, Shimano 11-speed, that's fine. And then on the wheels, you've got different rotor sizes being run by the different teams. So some teams are running 140 front rotors, 140 rear rotors. Some are running 160 front rotors, 140 rear rotors. And some are still running rim brakes. We know right now that, broadly speaking, rear rims, if there's a puncture, are most likely to be a Shimano rim with a 140 rotor on it. So we'll get those positioned on the car so they're very, very easily accessible. If someone has a front puncture, it's likely to be Shimano, but we don't know whether it's 140 or 160. So before the race, we'll visit the pits and we'll speak to all the lead mechanics and we'll get these specific technical details that we're missing. And then the mechanic, who generally sits behind the passenger seat, will have that on the headrest so that if we know we have got a couple of riders in a break, they can very quickly reference, right, who is it we've got? Could be Israel Startup Nation. Right, I know straight away that's a 160 front rotor and that's a 140 rear rotor. So in the event of a puncture, then the mechanic knows straight away where they're going to on the roof to get what wheel to deal with that specific problem. So a lot of this complexity is actually dealt with just simply via good pre-planning.
Phil and Tony haven't been the only ones grappling with the Herculean organisational challenge that is the modern Tour of Britain, however. Route director Andy Hawes, working with safety manager Steve Baxter and Sergeant Duncan Street of the Central Escort Group, has planned and driven every inch of its 1,309.9-kilometre route, 3 times at least. Here's Andy.
First run through is a sense check. Can we do this? 9 times out of 10, you pick your KOMs on first run through because just purely by the nature of a KOM, it presents itself right in front of you. Sometimes if we're lucky, we get the sprint locations as well. Sprint locations are becoming harder and harder to find every year now. What with all the local authorities putting, you know, all their traffic calming measures in and speed humps, splitters, islands, you name it. So the sprints don't often come all in one on the first run through. And then the second run through, as I say, we're doing this this with Duncan. He's since checking what we've done. And then we're picking up everything else along the route as like, okay, where does that junction go? What happens when we shut that one? Are they just going to nip round and get to there? Do we need to shut that one before that one? And yeah, we're getting a real good feel for everything and putting some flesh on the bones for the risk assessments and the ETAs. And then the final one is when we're really looking at the sporting aspect. Because yes, we might have found the KOM right at the beginning on stage one, but where actually are we going to finish it? And where actually are we going to start it? I have a kind of marking up spray, so I know that, right, this is where we're going to start it. So we mark it up there, finish it up there, take the pictures, and those pictures then go into document for my Route Tech signage crew. Come the day, they'll look at it, say, right, this is where he's marked it. Okay, yep, this looks like what it is. And then they go and put the signage out. So, yeah, it's the final route recce that we really fine-tune where the sporting points are.
The sporting points are naturally of greatest concern to the riders, and Harry Tanfield is well qualified to comment, having ridden and finished the Tour of Britain twice, firstly in 2017 for Canyon DHB, and again in 2019 for the now-defunct Katusha Alpecin World Tour squad. This year, Harry will miss the race and head instead to the Benelux Tour, a 7-stage race run in Holland and Belgium and a fixture of the World Tour calendar, still known to most fans, and Harry it seems, as the Bink Bank Tour. This year's Tour of Britain would be a poor fit for an 80-kilogram powerhouse, but Harry says its demanding parkour reflects its prestige, one that this year has attracted world champion Julian Alaphilippe, his DeKooning Quickstep teammate Mark Cavendish, and Jumbo-Visma's Wout van Aert.
I was always the first reserve for the Tour of Britain. With the course, every day is like super hard, like 3,500 meters, and it's just a better suit for the race program for me to not do Tour of Britain and to do Bing Bang because of the limited people that are there, and also like my characteristics and what I can do for the team to help, you know, are a lot better suited for Bing Bang Tour. Although it is my home race, it's unfortunate that they can't do both, that they overlap, but the level's higher in the Bing Bang Tour, and you know, the guys need me there. I can assist more in that race than what I can in Tour of Britain, I think. So, and the opportunity to get a win or a better result in Bing Bang is more important for the team than what it is in Tour of Britain because it's a World Tour race. It's clear that, you know, it's a real contrasting course compared to Bing Bang Tour, which is obviously running at the same time. People got to choose between the two. I think that the style of riders that are going to be going towards the Tour of Britain are looking at getting that training load in, getting that big racing load in, which they're going to get more so in Tour of Britain than what they are in the Bing Bang Tour as well. The course is just, it's a lot harder, but I think there's a lot more like puncher kind of classic style riders that'll be there as opposed to all out sprinters. Even if all out sprinters don't really exist anymore, it's more just everyone's very good at everything. So I wouldn't be surprised if Cab's down to a group of 30 guys and he's still there. So he's going well at the moment, so it'd be good to see. Hopefully Cab gets a stage in this one. Wout van Aert probably win almost every day there, so I think that says a lot about the guys that are going there. When you look at the list, you look at the list of sprinters that are going to Bing Bang, and you look at who's going to Tour of Britain, there's Cav, Wout van Aert, and I don't really know many other sprinters that are going there, to be honest, because it's not a particularly sprinter friendly race. I've looked at the profiles, there's maybe 3 sprints of some sort, possibly 4. I think there'll be 3 like kind of decent punch sprints, I would imagine. So I think there's still quite a lot of opportunities as well, sprinters in the race, which is But it's going to be, very high-level race if Alaphilippe's there and Wout van Aert, you know, guys like that trying to take on the GC, going to get ripped up quite a lot.
Larry Hickmott shares Harry's analysis. His coverage of every edition of the Tour of Britain since it relaunched in 2004 has made him an eyewitness to the success of homegrown talents and visiting superstars. Larry says that the Tour of Britain has grown steadily harder, more competitive and more exciting, and believes this year's edition will be no exception.
I think the race definitely is a lot more competitive, a lot harder than it was back in the beginning. It's always got the same format as any pro race does, which is lots of early breakaways and then being controlled for much of the race. But there were days, certainly in the year when Alex Dowsett was, I think, wearing yellow, a lot of the stages became uncontrolled because of the parkour that Sweet Spot and Andy Hawes introduced into the race. The race did become a lot more exciting and far less controlled. Lately, it's become more and more competitive. I did enjoy the days when Tom Boonen was wearing the rainbow stripes in the race. In those days, the race was not treated as a major race as it is now. I think it says a lot when you get guys like Wout van Aert coming here to prepare for the Worlds, as have other riders done in previous years. I think that says a lot about the standing of the race now. I think definitely 8 days and the parkour this year is hugely demanding. You know, I've spoken with a couple of riders who are riding it and a DS as well, and they've looked at it, and there's thousands and thousands of meters of climbing every stage, which for guys like Wout van Aert is no big deal. Even for guys like Mark Cavendish, it's probably not as tough as riding some of the Grand Tour stages, but definitely a tough race where at the end of 8 days that the riders will definitely know they've been in a bike race.
It's not only the Tour of Britain that has increased in stature. The neutral service powered by Brother UK in race support crews will roll out for their first big league professional race at this year's edition, after honing the service for almost a decade on the domestic scene. Phil Jones is keenly aware of the pressure that accompanies servicing the world's best riders on live television, but believes that the laser-focused planning natural to a major business and the vast experience of service manager Tony Barry will win the day.
You always have that pressure within neutral service, of course you do. And when you've got really big name riders, as you described there, that pressure somehow seems to escalate. I've had this chat with Tony, just said, you know, look, it's really, really important that we, through excellent pre-planning, we try and mitigate as much as possible in order that if we have something major happen, we're ready. We've been supporting neutral service now for nearly 10 years. And during that time, clearly, we've really been refining what that service does. So we started by really, you know, livering the cars, getting the right equipment onto the cars, the right bikes, the right equipment in the cars, wheel sets. And we've been through all the transitions, of course, of technology, the move from rim right the way through to disc. We really have got a lot of experience now in what good neutral service looks like. And now to be given the opportunity to support the Tour of Britain, you know, will be challenging for us because there's a lot of work we've had to do behind the scenes in the last few weeks just to make sure that of the 18 teams that we have racing in the Tour of Britain, that we can cover all the bases if it comes to service in a hurry.
Pressure is simply part of the package with a race as prestigious as the Tour of Britain. Whether providing neutral service to cycling superstars or planning a route that the peloton can negotiate safely and at speed. This year's biggest races have been plagued by huge crashes. In many cases, notably at the Tour de France, where a spectator brought down the entire peloton on the opening stage, an accusing finger has been pointed at the route planners for taking the peloton along narrow roads. Naturally, the Tour of Britain's route director can offer greater insight than social media's keyboard critics.
I would never criticise another event organiser because you don't know what they've had to go through to get the race to go down that particular road or why it's gone down that road. So you will never find me getting to Twitter or Instagram or Facebook after a race, banging the keyboard, saying that was absolutely shocking, because I'm not in their position. I don't know why they've had to do what they've had to do. I would never make a song and dance about that. You just look at it and you think, right, well, okay, I can't let that happen on our event. And what am I going to do on our event to make sure that doesn't happen? Tour de France, the opening week, yes, we all know it's chaotic. It's absolutely crazy. Everybody's fighting to be at the front the whole time. Speeds are getting faster. The roads are getting narrower. Even in France, the street furniture is popping up all over the place. And then you look at the Giro as well. The Giro's having exactly the same issues. You know, that huge crash on the Tour had a human factor involved in it as well. We all make silly mistakes, and that's literally what it was. It was a silly mistake. She didn't mean to do it, but I was just like, this probably one of the biggest crashes I've seen on the Tour. I felt sorry for all of the riders, you know, the preparation to get ready to race and then to have that wiped out so early on is just terrible. And you think, right, how am I going to stop this from happening on our event?
Narrow roads aren't a concern only for the riders or route planners. The neutral service crews must also make a detailed study of the parkour before every stage. The width of a road has a profound impact on the positioning of a neutral service vehicle, as Phil Jones explains.
I remember being at the Nationals a few years ago, and we were going through very, very narrow lanes, and the convoy was very, very strung out, and the brake was away. And as a result, the position of the rider in the brake, their team car in the convoy, was like 12 or something like that. They were way back. And of course, they had a technical issue, which we then needed to service. So depending on what the narrowness of the roads are like at certain key points can heighten the need for neutral service or lessen it. So wide roads, if a brake's 3 minutes up the road, it's highly unlikely that neutral service is going to have to play any part because there'll be a team car there. So it's only really when this sort of 1 minute gap begins to develop do the team cars get pulled in. So we could be active up until the point the brake is allowed to go. When the brake goes, the team cars tend to take over things. And then what we'll tend to do is do more service in the middle of the bunch. This particular race, it's very important that you have three neutral vehicles, not two. And in domestic cycling, we normally have two. So today, we've just had back, we've got a Skoda Estate on our fleet here, which we've just sent to the wrappers yesterday. And that's come back today. So that's now been fully wrapped as a neutral service vehicle. That's going off for racking next week. And then that'll be technically equipped. So that's one of our other challenges. We've then got to have the third vehicle. And that third vehicle will be mostly servicing wheels. The front two vehicles will, of course, also have bikes on the roof.
Bill and Tony have clearly left no stone unturned in providing a neutral service support able to mitigate every conceivable issue, what Brother UK's expert planners describe as known unknowns. The Tour of Britain is simply too prestigious to leave anything to chance. For 1 week each year, bike racing consumes the attention of the British public, who line the route in their tens of thousands to catch a glimpse of its speed and colour, while millions more watch on television. For Larry Hickmott, aka the hardest working man in cycling, and often the only journalist at many British events, the Tour of Britain is an invaluable showcase for British cycle sport.
In terms of effect and its standing of cycling in this country, I think the Tour of Britain does get out to the public. The public come out to watch it, and so therefore it's a hugely important event for the sport of cycling to bring it to the public, put it in the public mindset, and help promote it for future years, especially with sponsorship in cycling so hard to get. An event of this sort we have missed, whereas Europe, the mainland Europe, have not missed. They've had the Tour de France, they've had all the Grand Tours and big races. We haven't had anything. We haven't had anything of this level. And seeing the Premier calendars come back and the Tour Series come back, I mean, the Tour Series crowds were seemingly as good as they've always been. So I think there is a demand, there is a need for a race at this level to come back and reach the people.
Larry's point that British fans have had to endure an absence of top-level racing far longer than their European counterparts is especially valid. The 2019 World Championships in Yorkshire now seem a lifetime ago. The upside is that the work of route director Andy Hawes and his Sweet Spot colleagues has not been wasted. Much of the route planned for the 2020 edition, cancelled in the face of lockdown, will simply be used this year.
Out of the eight stages, we have been able to use 6.5. So we were in a very good position back end of 2019 into 2020. We actually got the first route recce in early. By mid-February, we had got the first four stages down on paper, ready to go. We were just kind of missing a fifth stage at that point and a confirmation of a finish of a sixth stage, but 7 and 8 were all in place. So we were in a very, very good position, and we were very fortunate that everybody was in total agreement when we had to make that decision on that fateful day in March. Do you know what? We're going to have to postpone. And everybody was in total agreement, said absolutely no drama. Let's pick what would have been 2020 up and let's drop it into 2021. So, yeah, we were in a good position. The Tour of Britain in 2021 would have been the epic of all Tour of Britains in 2020. We'd already designed the stages. We'd already gone down a long route with our stakeholders, and they were very keen that what we'd already planned continued for 2021, with the exception of a couple of venues that we've had to change the route and change the start location. Basically, there is no change or no huge change from what would have been 2020's race. It was exciting for 2020. It's even more exciting for 2021. It would have been a huge race last year, but because it didn't happen, it's going to be an even bigger race this year because UK hasn't seen any racing on this scale since the Worlds in Harrogate.
The 2020 parcours offered an embarrassment of riches. We'll hear later from Andy on his personal preference, but for Larry Hickmott, who's seen more stages of the Tour of Britain than most of us have had hot dinners, the opening stage in Cornwall is the jewel in the crown.
I think it will be a great race to watch because even from day one, the race goes up and down. It's a hugely exciting stage in Cornwall, and I don't know if they could have picked a better stage to kick the race off because it's going to catch a lot of teams out, I think. Those teams that haven't really read the road book. I spoke to a TS this morning. They've examined the course. They know it's going to be lots and lots of narrow roads and lots of sharp climbs. And they know how important positioning is going to be and all that. Whether a stage can be controlled in that sort of scenario, I don't know.
Controlling a race is a hallmark of top-flight professional cycling. Well-drilled teams with specialist riders tasked with specific duties delivers results for the best, but can make the racing dull and formulaic. In recent years, the Tour of Britain has offered the best of both worlds, challenging the heavyweight teams with demanding routes and inviting a handful of British squads from professional cycling's third tier who race in a far less predictable fashion. Harry Tanfield has seen the Tour of Britain from both angles. In 2017, he made his race debut with the third-tier Canyon DHB squad before returning in 2019 with World Tour outfit Katusha Alpecin. So how does a team's budget and squad depth affect its tactics and ambition? Here's Harry.
Everyone has a goal. Everyone has a job to do in their race. Whereas in Continental, it's kind of like, right, we need to be in the breakaway. So it doesn't matter who it is, someone's in the breakaway because they need to be on TV the whole day. Ideally, it's not one guy because one guy might be good in the final for the sprint and they'll just try and wing it at the end by following some good wheel. Everyone else is searching for the breakaway. And obviously, one guy can only be in the breakaway. So if one guy has gone in the breakaway, then the other guys are just left to support the other rider who... they can't really do much for them anyway because they're better off just following the lead outs of the faster guys anyways versus in a World Tour team where it's much more organised. It might be a specific role for one person to be in the break or no one to be in the break or someone to be riding the front of the race in anticipation of the final to set up a certain rider. Someone might be assigned just to be doing bottles during the day. But I remember the Tour of Britain was quite a free race actually when I was with Katusha. We had a plan in the final, one or two guys to be like either or. We would do everything we could to position them well and to lead them out into the bottom. You've got to ride the front for the last 2 kilometres into the final little climb or final sprint. With the kilometre to go, then you've got to do it. You've got one of your sprinters or your guys means that he's staying at the front or he's on the wheel that he needs to be on. You've got to keep the speed high. It's all in for that one team effort, for the goal of the team of getting that one result, really, as opposed to other riders trying to pick up stuff themselves.
Each year, race director Mick Bennett must balance the regulatory demands of a UCI-sanctioned professional road race with the expectation among British fans that the best domestic teams will be given a chance to test themselves against the visiting giants of the UCI World Tour. Larry Hickmott has watched the organisation's varied attempts as an interested observer, noting the effect of an unpopular qualification system on British cycling's National Road Series and the maturity of the home nation's strongest teams, who now carry the fight to the big budget squads for success each year in the Jersey competitions.
I've never spoken to Mick about the demands that the organisation has in terms of how many teams it can put on the road. But it would certainly be nice for the sport, or better for the sport, in two ways. Having all the British teams in the race does help the sponsorship and does help keep the sport at a higher level in this country than it would if only one or two teams were in the race. And the other thing was the qualification system. The qualification system for the Tour of Britain in the Premier calendars had a huge effect, and not a good one, on the racing. It was quite negative racing because every team manager had the Tour of Britain as their ultimate goal. So a lot of tactics would revolve around that. It depends on the riders that the UCI teams here have got to play with. You take Ribble Worldtide, they've got a guy, James Shaw, who is sorted with another team for next year, but will still be going into this race, no doubt, with a lot of ambition after 2 top 10s in big races already this year in Slovenia and Norway. Canyon DHB, I think they've won the last 2 French jerseys, and now they have a rider who won the KOM jersey as well in Jacob Scott. So they definitely have the strength, because those competitions are no longer an easy win, the sprints competition and the KOM jersey, etc. There are teams like Canyon who do have the strength in depth to go into this race on a good level compared to the other teams. Whether all the UCI teams have that strength is another matter.
The final constituency concerned with the Tour of Britain's great continental divide are the riders. For British riders on third-tier Conti teams, the Tour of Britain represents a shop window with few rivals. Harry Tanfield caught the eye of UCI World Tour suitors by winning a stage of the 2018 Tour de Yorkshire. He believes that talented British professionals can make a positive impression on their World Tour rivals by following the right wheels and negotiating finales with intelligence and panache.
I think the guys that can naturally climb pretty well You just got to look for the riders, look for the teams, and just hold your own at the front and don't get in the way, but just be at the front on the wheels you need to be on. And naturally, the rest of the people around you will just drop away. And if you're good enough, you're good enough, you'll stay there. So, you know, you're always looking just to follow a good wheel, especially if it's a mountain finish or a hard hilly day or something like that. As it's getting more and more selective, just being in that position to be able to follow. And if it whittles down to a group of 20 guys and you're still there, then, you know, that's a great opportunity for you as a UK rider to then demonstrate, you know, your ability kind of thing. Even if you're on the attack and it doesn't work out, or if you're gambling it for the final and trying to follow the wheels or stuff like that, you've got to play it as the race unfolds, really.
About the only person involved with the Tour of Britain not concerned by the classification of the teams is route director Andy Hawes. Andy's focus lies elsewhere, specifically on designing a route that is challenging and safe. He must also design a route that minimises the logistical challenge. Interstage transfers, where the teams travel by coach after the finish of one stage to the start town of the next, can tax the riders' physical resources almost as much as the racing, as Phil Jones explains.
Post-ride, you need to very quickly eat, you need to get showered, you need to get changed, you need to have a massage. So you've got sort of like this hour straight after the stage where you're doing the very quick things of having something to eat quickly, getting your bike off to somebody, getting showered and getting into some different clothes. So that's assuming you're not even on the podium, you've got to do all of that, a warm down, all that stuff. So by the time that's done and dusted, it's probably going to be for a lot of these riders a good hour or more after they finish before they're even a coach. And so let's just say then you've got no one on the podium, so it's like 4 o'clock or more before you're sort of physically away. Let's say you then got 2 hours or 3 hours worth of transfer to do. You're at the hotel at maybe 6:30, 7 o'clock, and then you've got to get into your room. Then you might want to have your massage. Then you've got to have something to eat. You've got to call your partner and all that kind of good stuff. So the longer the transfer, the more compressed that becomes. And that is why often a lot of these riders are kind of, when they look at these stages, they pick and choose their stages where actually it might not be worth me being on the podium that day, because thinking of the transfer the day after, it's better that we're all away and we look for the stage the day after. And I know that sounds a bit insane, but I think on some of the really big grand tours, I think some of that thinking might come into play.
If, for a business leader, Phil seems impressively well informed about the post-stage protocols of a professional cyclist, it's because he gained an invaluable insight from riding the entire route of the Tour of Britain one day ahead of the race in 2018.
Well, of course, I'm no elite or world tour rider, but I think where the tiredness can build up is actually transfers. That was the one thing that I think was the real insight I had from riding in 2018, when you just finish a stage and you have to drive to another stage. And when they end up being big transfers, they can be quite tiring. This particular episode of the Tour of Britain, obviously, is going really from the bottom of the country, isn't it? It's going from Penzance, you know, all the way up to Aberdeen. Thankfully, all going north, which is great. So from south to north, which is wonderful. But there are still some reasonable transfers that have to be done in between stages, effectively. And they are the things where I think that ultimately they end up building up additional tiredness, because, of course, that cuts into recovery time. Stage two, which ends in Exeter, and the following day, they are setting off from Carmarthenshire. So there's a sort of reasonable size transfer there. We've then got between 5 and 6, Warrington to Carlisle, and, of course, Gateshead up to Hawick. Compared to when I did it, we actually, I think, had longer transfer distances. I think this year, the way the route is going directly south to north, it is actually a little bit easier.
As well as planning a route that heads steadily from south to north, Sweet Spot have minimised transfers at the 2021 Tour of Britain by allowing the race to do the work, as Andy Hawes explains.
Sometimes we have to make the race work for us. Say, for example, the Aberaeron onto the Great Orme stage. We needed to get further north to allow us to have our stage up in Cheshire. You know, by starting down in Aberaeron, that race is 210 kilometres later and we're in Llandudno now. The stage itself has moved the whole race. We don't have to worry about a transfer then, because they've almost in effect done the transfer by doing the stage.
When the race begins, Andy does not simply put his feet up and admire his handiwork. His role transforms to that of moto regulator. As a pillion passenger on almost the final motorbike ahead of the seething pack of riders, he is their last line of defence, a pair of eyes ceaselessly scanning the road ahead and the crowds, constantly seeking a disaster to avert.
Actually, on the event, I'm probably the last but one motorbike in front of the peloton. So the only other vehicle usually behind me is the TV Moto. I'm the pillion as the motor regulator. So not only am I looking in the mirrors of the moto that I'm on, I'm looking over my shoulders, you're looking in forward, and you're sort of gauging and just looking at it and thinking, right, what's going on? What are they going to do? You can see a dog up there. How tight is it on its lead and everything like that? So I'll say to my pilot, so look, just roll up to there, will you? And you just pull your dog back. Or, you know, you can see them with, you know, flags or draping stuff over the barriers or anything like that. And you're just constantly scanning and trying to do a dynamic risk assessment as to what's going to cause an issue. After every stage finish, we'll have a debrief with Mick Bennett, the race director, all of the commissaires. Duncan will be there, Steve will be there. We will also have the second motor regulator. So we're all in our RV after the stage. So we all have a big debrief. Literally, as soon as everybody can get into that, everybody goes, right, how did today go? How can we improve on that for the next day? And sometimes, you know, that meeting will last 15 minutes. At other times, it will last an hour. It's very rare that I get to sort of sample the atmosphere at the finish, because my role as the motor regulator, I literally roll in maybe 2 minutes maximum before the peloton comes in. I don't even see the finish anymore because I go off down deviation. So by the time I've gone off down deviation, my pilot's parked, I've walked from, you know, Tech Moto parking to the finish line, the riders are coming. There was a number of stages 2000, I had no idea who won. I know how I left the race and who was in the front and who was doing the poles and, you know, who it looked like might win. But yeah, I had no idea until you get the communique at the end of the night, or you manage to just catch the highlights out of one of the windows in event control.
There is another major component, the commercial. Routes are planned around start and finish towns, and the council's prepared to host the race. Andy Hawes explains the commercial imperative behind his sporting canvas.
Usually it comes from Jonathan Derlin, who's our commercial director. He deals with all our stakeholders. And he'll say, Andy, we're going to have a stage. It's going to start in Cumbria and it's going to finish in Gateshead. Get me from Cumbria to Gateshead and make it as exciting as you can. Making a stage exciting for me through there is because I know them. It's like, right, yeah, I can make it exciting and I will. We've got Cumbria County Council that we're dealing with and Gateshead. But you can't get from Cumbria to Gateshead without going through Northumberland and parts of County Durham. So that brings in another two sections of people. You start off with your conversations with Cumbria and say, right, where do you want to start? They say, okay, I want to start in Carlisle. Okay, right. So is there anything in particular you want me to take in Cumbria? And then we'll bend the route to what they want. They were very keen that we took in Pooley Bridge, which was wiped out in the big storms, and they've rebuilt it and it's fantastic. And they were also keen that we had a sprint in the high street in Penrith. Right, okay, so I know we're going to drop due south as quickly as we can, almost do a U-turn to come straight back up into Penrith. And knowing that we're going to Gateshead, we might as well go over Hartside while we're at it. Alston Moor. Now, we haven't been up Alston and we haven't been onto the moor. And what we got there, and we're like, right, well, there's Kilhope Cross. Like, whoa, okay, Kilhope Cross, that's 100 metres higher than Hartside. Like, fantastic. That's a shorter climb, but it's much more brutal. Like, right, where can we go from there? Like, oh, Birtree Fell. Right, okay, that will drop us into Hexham, that will go into Pridder, that then we can do into Rowlands Gill, and before you know it, you're back in Gateshead. You then speak to County Durham, and then you speak to Northumberland, and then eventually, you know, you're speaking with Gateshead.
The sheer number of public bodies that Andy must deal with to get the Tour of Britain's show on their roads is mind-boggling. In the case of Stage 6, he liaises separately with the highways authorities and police forces of Cumbria, County Durham, Northumberland, and Gateshead. If a stage passes a motorway, he must inform Highways England. If it crosses a railway line, he must inform Network Rail. If it takes in the coastline, he involves the Coast Guard. Astonishingly, given the COVID situation, the most recent stage of the Tour of Britain was its 2019 finale in Manchester. Its route from Altrincham to the city centre and an incredible finish on Deansgate required the cooperation of 14 local authorities.
If anybody had seen the Manchester route when we drove it for the first time, they'd say we couldn't have done what we did. I almost said, well, we can't do this. But we persevered with it and we said we got all these 14 sort of local authorities working. And I'm not afraid to say, you know, I came down that finish straight on Deansgate and I had a tear in my eye. And it was just just incredible, just to see what everybody, not just me, but everybody from the start crew to all of the finish crew to all of Sweet Spot that were involved in it, what we achieved that week and that stage. I mean, to give you a kind of example, we drove that final stage on our final route recce, and in the car we had an average speed of 19 miles an hour. The stage was run off damn near, I think, 46, 47 kilometres an hour. You know, it's like they raced it quicker than we were able to drive it on that final run through. So sometimes it's good to just get in the car, move on to the next one. And other times, you know, you just want to have that moment and, you know, just savour the atmosphere.
For the councils who pay to host the Tour of Britain, the atmosphere is what it's all about. In practical terms, this means thousands of people flocking to town and city centres. It means footfall on shopping parades and bums on seats in bars and restaurants. As the leader of a major business, Phil Jones can offer a clear insight into the Tour of Britain's commercial value. And as a resident of Cheshire, he believes this year's Stage 5 will be a valuable boost for the economy of its Finnish town, Warrington.
It's absolutely massive because, unlike other events, perhaps even some of the other Sweet Spot portfolio events like the Tour Series, you know, they tend to be highly focused just on one place in one town. But the Tour of Britain just engages the whole country. You know, it goes right the way through the spectrum from school children through to pensioners are at the side of the road to see the race. It's a proper spectacle. And that's really, really good for all of the councils that actually get involved with that race, because it really does put them on the map. Stage 5 this year, which is in Cheshire, actually ends just up the road from me in Warrington. I'm going in the neutral service vehicle that day, so that's going to be, you know, exciting, because I'm going to be riding around in the neutral car on the roads that I ride every weekend, which is wonderful. But I know Warrington as a place, you know, it's just spent tens of millions on the regeneration of its major shopping areas, brand new food court open, cinema complex and everything. And they want to put a spotlight on that. They want to put a spotlight on it. So what better way than to have the race finishing in front of the Golden Gates, the very famous Golden Gates in Warrington, in order that then Warrington can be talked about as a thriving town, investing in itself, good place to live, and its tens of thousands of residents can come into Warrington, pack those bars and restaurants out for the afternoon, and everyone goes away feeling rather good about the world. So that's why the councils do it. But right the way through the route, you know, which comes right the way through to sort of a lot of the Golden Triangle of Cheshire, starting in the footballer world of Alderley Edge and, you know, going out into the Peak District and then ultimately rolling quite close to my house, actually, before it then sort of turns to come into Warrington. It just means all the businesses along that route are going to benefit somehow. There's going to be people out on the streets. And when it's a Tour of Britain, the numbers are hundreds of thousands. And that can only mean tills ringing for all those businesses along that route.
The huge crowds attracted by the Tour of Britain are motivating not only for councils and local businesses, but most especially for the riders. Harry Tanfield made a highly impressive debut for Canyon in 2017, out-sprinting Caleb Ewan in the bunch kick that concluded Stage 4 and finishing only 1 second behind Primoz Roglic in the following day's time trial. In 2019, he returned to ride a more controlled but no less enjoyable race for Katusha Alpecin, riding as lead-out man for two-time Monument winner Alexander Kristoff. Harry remembers the vast impact made on him by the 2017 edition as a 22-year-old racing on home roads for a British-registered squad from a professional team in cycling's third tier.
It was the biggest race ever, like, you know, it was the biggest race that existed in 2017. It was a really good year, 2017, as well. It was sprinter friendly. I enjoyed it. It was in breaks quite a lot, getting points, and I think got the top 10, I think, actually. It was good on the time trial and was good on the sprint stages too, mixing it up. Yeah, it was a really good race. I remember one of the sprint stages being right up there in the mix, following the guys at the front and being like, oh, I'm in the lead outs here. Casually rolling like top 10 or something, but, you know, it's great for the team and then get the points and get that publicity as well. Got to be in the top 10, so your name's on the board and on the television and all that. It's good for the sponsors, and it would have been real nice to repeat that at some point as well. So I'm sure there'll be an opportunity in the future, hopefully, when it's not a 3,500 metres every day. Crowds are massive. Support from everyone around in the towns and the villages that you're passing. Like, it could have been the Tour de France coming through, you know. Big support from everyone locally, and loads of people wanting the race to come through and shouting you on and stuff like that. Especially being the breakaways, you fought all day on the road, especially being English as well. It was really nice. The one in 2019, the last one I rode, that was, again, a good race. Enjoyed doing that one.
This year's race is unlikely to be enjoyable for any of the riders, and this observation is intended, of course, as a complement to the route. With a combined 19,000 metres of climbing, even the strongest riders in the race are likely to suffer. Larry Hickmott notes the presence of a team time trial on stage 3 and believes the need for strength in depth could exacerbate the plight of British domestic teams starved by lockdown of international racing. For some, he says, just finishing will be an achievement.
I think that's one of the things that a lot of the teams have been preparing for and looking at their riders, because they haven't had the level of racing and the amount of UCI racing this year that they would normally. But just trying to make sure that their riders can get round the Tour of Britain, which has never really been an issue before. But this year, it could be an issue with such a difficult parcours. Because it's got a team time trial in it, that will be significant, I think, because the team time trial also goes uphill a little. The team will have to have strength in depth. I've not seen any lineups as yet of the riders who are coming here, other than Wout van Aert and Mark Cavendish. But teams like Ineos, Jumbo-Visma, you know, they do have the strength in depth to do a good team time trial, as well as be competitive in the road stages.
Strength in depth is a stock in trade, of course, for the UCI World Tour squads that Larry mentions. We know already that De Koninck at Quickstep and Jumbo-Visma are bringing some of their biggest stars to the race, and their support riders are likely to be equally impressive. What hope, then, do the British-registered UCI Continental squads have in carrying the fight to such formidable opposition? Harry Tanfield offers some hard-won advice to this year's debutants.
Just take it easy on the first 2 days. I mean, the race starts pretty hard anyway, but for a lot of guys, it's going to be a new experience for them. It's a long race as well. It's 8 days. Time trial day is still going to be a hard day for those guys, even to make the time cut. So they've got to go full gas every day. I think that it'll wear people down quite a lot, especially with the route. It's not like you're doing 1,500 metres or 2,000 metres and you have a sprint day thrown in here and there. It is every day is hard. Ease on the side of caution and don't spend all your pennies in the first 2 days and sacrifice potentially. You shouldn't miss a time cut because it's 15%, I think, for most of the stages, which is all right, but you've only got a certain amount of pennies and you have to kind of spend them wisely. I think that's what it boils down to, really, in an 8 day race. It is a long race. If everyone's completely cooked after 3 days in the team, there's not really much point in the team being there if they can't be in the breakaway, if they can't feature in the end or to attack in the final or something. You know, there's if everyone's absolutely on the knees and out the back for the last 4 days of the race, they might as well not really be there. So I think it's good for people to share the load within the team. You can't expect one guy to be trying to go in the break for an hour at the start of the race every single day. It needs to be a team effort to cover moves and stuff like that. So people just have to be a little bit conservative with it, I would probably say, just because of the nature of the parcours for this year.
From debutants to rising stars to seasoned pros to Grand Tour winners, Britain does not lack talent. Increasingly, riders from the home nation at the Tour of Britain are representing World Tour teams. Larry Hickmott has his fingers crossed that this year, the visiting squads from the top tier will select the best of British.
Just thinking about Ineos, I'm hoping that Ethan Hayter, who's such an exciting rider, comes to the race as well. I've lost count of how many races he's won this year, including GCs. Another rider that I'm looking forward to seeing who's done well, and that's Conor Swift, who's won a big race in Trobro. He's got his third top 10 in a French stage race this week, and I notice his team are riding, and I'm sure they were not going to send French team here without either Conor or Dan McClay here. So, yeah, it'll be very interesting to see how they go.
Regardless of the nationalities or profiles of the riders, the budgets of the teams, the star of this year's show is unquestionably the course. Time trials and road stages, coastlines and city centres, the epic route planned by Andy Hawes lies at the heart of this most demanding edition of the Tour of Britain, both figuratively and literally. Let's leave the final word then to Andy. Having started work on the route more than a year ago, conducted endless meetings with countless bodies to secure its sign-off, and driven every inch of it 3 times at least, he surely must have a favourite stage.
I have been asked this question so many times this year, and I still don't think I can give a definitive, do you know what, it's going to be X stage. They're all amazing stages. They all have something about them that's unique to that stage. You look at stage 1, the first 30 kilometres up through St Just, dropping down into St Ives, Carbis Bay, just stunning. It's so sort of quintessentially Cornish. You know, I kind of pride myself that somebody could pick me up, to drop me in this country somewhere, and I could look around and I pretty much could tell you where I was. The Devon stage never fails to sort of like put a smile on my face. And the Carmarthenshire stage, the team time trial, which just, you know, through the valley of heading towards the Botanic Gardens, stunning. The Welsh stage, again, the Welsh coast, fantastic. Cheshire, with descending down the Cat and Fiddle into Macclesfield, nice. Stage six, oh, you know, that's an amazing stage. Descending down Dockray into Watermillock to then go alongside Ullswater, through Penrith, up Hartside, Killock Cross, Bertree Fell. And then nothing screams more Gateshead than absolutely finishing that stage at the foot of the Angel of the North. So that, for me, is right up there. But then, you know, we go into Scottish Borders and it's just, again, stunning. And then to have the final stage in Aberdeenshire. And I must admit, I'd been to Aberdeen maybe two or three times, but never into the Shire. And, you know, the Cairnow Mount is just a stunning climb. I'm torn. I really am torn between stages six and eight. But if you really push me, I think I'll probably go stage six.
Let's end this episode in our traditional fashion with a social shout-out. If you want to follow any of our expert witnesses, you can do so at the following addresses. Phil Jones is on Twitter, at PhilJones40 for business and leadership, and at RoadPhil for cycling. Andy Hawes is on Twitter and Instagram, at FastHawsey, FastHawsey. Harry Tanfield is on Twitter, at HarryTanfield94, and on Instagram, at HarryTanfield.94. That's a full stop between Tanfield and 94. Larry Higmott is on Facebook, at VeloUK, on Twitter, at VeloUK, and at Aussie Larry, and on Instagram, at VeloUK website. And we sincerely hope you'll follow Brother Cycling. We're at Brother Cycling on all three channels. Thank you very much indeed for listening, and with the shadow of COVID still hanging over us, do please stay safe.
If you've enjoyed today's episode, please hit subscribe.